Okay, today we're going to start Perek Yud-Gimel, the 13th chapter. Anyone has it? So, last week, let's just recap. In Perek Yud-Beis, the 12th chapter, he defined a Benoni, finally. It's called a Benoni because he has aspects of a tzaddik and aspects of a rasha, really. So aspects of a tzaddik is that operationally, behaviorally, the Benyani doesn't do anything wrong because it's complete control, as we explained last week, of his levushim, his garments, his expression, thought, speech, and action. So before we continue, I just want to mention we're learning today in the merit of, we don't have the Hebrew name, but it's John, the daughter of Liesl, who's had an accident, and we should refer Shlema. So the Benyani has is complete control, thought, speech, and action. Which means that he doesn't do anything wrong. Not only doesn't do any averus, but he doesn't do anything that's ungodly. Even in permissible things, even in klipas noiga, everything he does is only to serve Hashem. So that's why he's sort of on that front more like a tzaddik. However, where he's got similarities to Rasha is that the fact that the nefesh abamis, the animal soul, still exists within him, still has a say, still has a voice, I suppose is the right word. But doesn't get listened to, but it still has a voice necessarily. Nevertheless, and therefore, since the nefesh b'amis is klipa, it's concealment of God, it's impurity, it's the idea of sitra achra. Therefore, he's not a tzaddik. But he's, right, a tzaddik is either the nefesh b'amis is completely gone, or it's even a perfect tzaddik. It's more than gone. It's transformed, and so on. Yeah. Now he did say that the benyani in davening time. Right, we talked about the benyani when he davens. Then he anithetizes the nefesh abami, so it's almost like a tzaddik then. Yeah. However, afterwards it comes back and it still has a voice, right? Now, we also explain, I just want to give it sort of just a bit of the full picture here, that voice is, when we talk about, the voice doesn't happen in the three expressions of thought, speech, and action, but we explain the difference between thought on the one hand and speech and action on the other hand. So, the Benoni might have a temptation to indulge, for example, but never speaks about it, never puts it into practice. That doesn't mean, however, he doesn't have a thought, right? Because the thought is really indivisible from the raw passion, the raw temptation. So as soon as he has a temptation to get angry, for example, or temptation to, he thinks about, you know, he might think about something wrong, but he doesn't have a temptation, a struggle, but as soon as he does, he will have that initial thought, but he will right away push it away. So he will not sustain the thought, right? It's an active thought, but he will right away push it away. Because you're not in control. Unless you're a tzaddik, you're not in control of your initial thoughts. Someone might say something to you and you get offended. There might be a split second when you're offended, but which might tempt you to be angry, to lose your temper. But nevertheless, the Benoni will not do that. Not only will not do that, he won't even entertain it. Not only that, he will distract himself away from the thought right away and even turn towards good. So we learned towards the end of the parak last week that this is particularly relevant or particularly active when it comes to things between people and other people. So for example, anger, revenge, hatred, that kind of thing. The Benyani might have all these things initially, but will push it away right away and in fact channel it towards good. The example he asks us to learn from is Yosef HaTzadik. Not only didn't take revenge against his brothers, he actually did good for them. He sustained them, he fed them, and so on and so forth. And we talked about last week how that comes about. It's also a whole thought process that everything comes from Hashem, and that really no one can actually hurt us, only if Hashem wants him to. So therefore, if it happens to us, it's for a purpose. We have to give purpose to it, and so on and so forth. We did make a distinction about those initial temptations, that there is a difference with the Benyani, particularly the Benyani that davens in that way, that he will never entertain, even in thought, even initially, the thought of doing an avera. Just not the Benyani's world. In other words, this is an important idea, that even though the Benyani is someone who still struggles, and therefore that's a good model for us to learn from, because we all struggle with inner conflict and so on. But the true Benyani, in other words, that's true with the aspiring Benyani, that we struggle with lots of things, but the true Benyani has gotten to the point where he really lives a different life, and he lives a life where contemplating doing an Avera is just not an option. Similar, the analogy I gave was, with most of us, contemplating eating on Yom Kippur is just not an option. We never even think about it. We might think about talking Lashon Hara, we might think about talk in the middle of davening. I don't know, these things might be tempting and maybe all might fall through sometimes, but not fasting in Kippur. We might be hungry, that's not, it might be painful, but that's not the point, right? No one even think, you know, I think this year I want fasting in Kippur. No one even thinks like that, because not in our world. But the Bain, the whole Torah mitzvah is like that, right?
You know, that's a really good example.
What do you mean? Right, because in Kippur, so you know, in Kippur, right? Mm. But the Beinoni, the whole Torah mitzvah is like that. Mm. You know, you never even contemplate speaking against another yid or getting angry or getting angry. You might yeah, cause that's like a more emotional thing. But like, you know, eating treif or something like that, you never even contemplate, because not in his world, right? However, the things which have to do with indulgence, it does, because that's like more of a temptation. And since the nefesh abam still has a voice. Yes, the Bain, he could be tempted to eat more than he needs to indulge more than he needs to sleep more than longer than he needs to, whatever the case is. But he will still push it away and won't actually implement it, right? Okay. That's essentially the Bain. Yeah. What he does in Perek Yud Gimel, he actually answers the questions that he asked in chapter 1. So I need to, I don't know if everyone was here, or at least let me refresh everyone's memory. So there's a few questions that were asked in chapter 1, which he now actually answers. Took 12 chapters, but now we answer it, right? The first one, he quoted the Gemara that before a person is born, they make the neshama take an oath that be a tzaddik and don't be a rasha, right? And then he said, however, the Gemara continued, that even if the whole world tells you you're a tzaddik, you should consider yourself like a rasha. So yes, that's a really strange thing. And the Pirkei Avos says, one shouldn't define themselves as a rasha. And also logically it doesn't make sense because if you do that, you'll come to, either you come to not care, either you'll be depressed all the time, why am I a Russia? Or if I keep defining myself as a Russia, I'm gonna lose hope or despair, whatever the case. Okay. That was one question. The other question was, he proved that a Benyani never does anything wrong. The problem with that is a certain Gemara. Right? The Gemara says that a tzaddik is, you know, the Eitz HaTov rules, judges, right? The by the Rasha, the Eitz HaRa rules. By Benini, Zeh v'Zeh Shoiftam, both do, right? Which is problematic. If we say that a Benini is someone that actually never actually does an Aveira, and as we explained 2 weeks ago, that he's in the space, his mindset, right? His mindset is that he never did an Aveira, he never will do an Aveira, then how can you say that his Yetzer Tov and Yetzer Hara are both in control? That doesn't make sense, right? Furthermore, it also doesn't make sense that in that same Gemara, Rabba, the great Rabba, who's an unbelievable tzaddik, said, "Kegon amno benini." If you want an example of a benini, it's me. Now, we know who Rabba was. Rabba was an unbelievable tzaddik. Rabba was someone, the Gemara tells a story that when he was so learning Torah the whole time, he never even wasted 1 minute and a second from learning Torah, that when the Malach HaMavos, the angel of death, was trying to get him to die, couldn't, because the Torah protects you, of course, right? You have to distract him somehow. Right? So he thought he was a Benyani, he thought he had half mitzvahs and half averus. It's not, he can't entertain that idea. And in fact, Abaya, his student, turned to him and says, if you're a Benyani, like, where does it leave the rest of us? I mean, we're finished, right? So he said, it must be that a Benyani is something different. It must be that a Benyani is actually has no Averis. And even so, even though probably Rabba wasn't a Benyani, he was really a tzaddik, right? But nevertheless, we can understand if a Benyani is such a person, high level of person, doesn't do any Averis, we can understand at least how Rabba can mistaken himself that he's a Benyani, out of humility, right? Even humility has to make sense. The Torah doesn't recognize false humility. Humility doesn't mean telling a lie. Right, humility doesn't say, you know, I'm a thief and an aggressive person and I hurt people when I don't. Right? I mean, that's not humility, right? So to say I'm a Benyani, if a Benyani means I'm Averus, the rubber, that's not humility, that's wrong. To say I'm a Benyani because there's a very subtle difference between a Benyani and a Tzaddik, that could be entertained, and we have to understand why Rabba would make such a mistake, which we'll explain later, right? Those are essentially the questions from Perek Aleph. And now he answers some of these questions. So let's have a look. Perek Yud Gimel. So he says, "Ubazeh yuvin loshen maimer Chazal." For this, we can understand the saying of Chazal that Beinonim ze vaze shoiftan. Right? That the Beinoni both are in control. Now, what he points out here, Pirush, which means the Yetzer Tov, the Yetzer Hara. Okay. Now, and what happened, now you have to understand, over here he highlights a nuance. When we learned the Gemara, Zev was a Shaitan, two judges, one judge, we didn't pay attention to the fact that it doesn't say Moshe, which means to rule. It says judge. What's the difference between a judge and a ruler? A ruler is in control, a judge isn't. A judge voices an opinion. Right? Okay. And then Hashem helps the Beinoni overcome. So the Chesiv, as it says in the Pasuk, Ki lamid limin evyoin loishia mishoiftei nafshei. Hashem stands next on the right-hand side of the poor person, the spiritually poor, to save him from the judges of his soul, meaning the Yetzer Tov and the Yetzer Hara. Says the Tanya, v'loi omru ze v'ze moishlim chas v'shalom. It doesn't say that the Beinoni, the Yetzer Tov and the Yetzer Hara, both rule. It doesn't say that. Perek Yud Gimel. Why? Because if there's any rule, if there's any control over the small city, right, the person, the human experience, for the Yetzirah, even for a little bit of time, as we've learned, Nikorosha, at that moment it's called a Rasha. If he gives into the control of the Yetzirah, at that moment is a Rasha. But we didn't. But he says you have to go back to the original question. It doesn't say by the Beinoni ze vaze moishlim that they both rule. It doesn't say that. It says they both judge. What does that mean? Ela hayetzahara. What is the yetzahara by a Beinoni? What is it? Eino irak. It's only al derech moshe by way of analogy. Kemo shoifet v'dayan. Ha'oimer daitoi ba mishvara. Just like a judge. One of the judges. A panel. Got a panel of judges. One judge voices his opinion in the judgment case, in the litigation. Right? Yes, so that's true. In other words, the judge has a voice. He doesn't rule, he's not in control if his judgment will actually be implemented, but he has a voice. That's the pshat in the Gemara, that by Beinonim Zev Vazer Shoiftan, the Yetzer Tov and the Yetzer Hara, the Nefesh HaKis, Nefesh HaBamis, are both judges, meaning they both have a strong voice. That is true. By Beinonim, that's the difference between a Beinonim and a Tzaddik. Beinoni, although it doesn't listen to Nefesh HaBamis, Nefesh HaBamis still has a voice. And that's what the Gemara meant. That's answering the question of chapter 1. But the Afal Pichein, even though he has a voice, Yachaliya Shelo Yepsak Aloch Kach Lamaisa. It's possible, even the judge voices his opinion, it's very possible that the ruling, the psak, the conclusion, will not be like that judge. Because there's a dissenting judge. Right? There's another judge who has a different opinion. But tzarach lachriya b'neim, and you need to, what's the word? You have to referee between them. You have to, what's the word I'm looking for? Judicate, yes, between them, right? And what happens is, if you've got three judges, for example, the halacha k'divrei ha-machriya, who's going to be, so judge one says guilty, the judge two says innocent, who's the halacha going to be like? The third judge. He's the balanced one, right? So the question is, how does that follow through in the whole analogy? In other words, so the Yetzer Hara, the Beinoni has two judges. The Yetzer Tov, the Yetzer Hara, right? The Yetzer Tov says, don't do it. Don't do anything wrong, do a mitzvah. The Yetzer Hara says, don't do a mitzvah, do something wrong. So we've got two judges, they're both voicing an opinion. But who's the halacha like? So where's the third judge, right? So he says like this. He says, kach, let's see how it plays out with the Yetzer Tov, the Yetzer Hara. The Yetzirah says its opinion. In fact, normally what happens is the Yetzirah is the first one to voice an opinion. Because when you're faced with a situation, right, in other words, like this, not always like when a Beinoni gets up in the morning, obviously his first thought is, I'm going to go down and put on tefillin. But let's say you're faced with a situation, someone says something bad to you. There's a temptation.
It's chemistry
in London. Yeah, correct.
Okay.
Yeah, right. Because you have to remember, right? So the Nefesh, why the Nefesh HaBamis always comes first, because the Nefesh HaBamis, the animal soul is animalistic, it's emotional, it's impulsive, it's instinctive. which is always faster than the brain. It's faster than the nefesh elokis, always. So if someone says something to me that I didn't like, what's activated first? Keep calm and collected, and then, you know, the first by the brain, the first voice comes, the nefesh abam, is from the heart. The left ventricle of the heart, as we learned, right? It says, go bash him up. First voice, right? So, kach, it's the way we place it is like this. Yetzahara says its opinion in the left ventricle of the heart. Even from the heart, where now it says it's got that impulse, but we need to implement it, right? Like we explained a few chapters before, it goes straight to the brain to think about it. Okay, like I got this feeling of anger, it's gone out to my brain. What am I going to do now? Am I going to scream at him, or am I going to physically hurt him? Right. But what happens is in the brain, miyad choylek olav ashoifet hasheni. Immediately the second judge dissents, argues. What's the second judge? Shu hanefesh lakish shebamoach. It's the godly soul. Godly soul says, no, 1 second, cool it. You didn't mean it. It's not good for you to get angry. It's not good for you to do an aveira. It's not good for you to overindulge. It's bad for your neshama. It's bad for your connection with Hashem. And right, so the nefesh lakish comes up with the opposite opinion. Why is it right? And then it resends the signal back to the heart. And that sends a signal back to the right ventricle of the heart, which is the emotional headquarters of the nefesh elokis. And now what you got is, you got the two impulses in the heart really arguing with each other. Right? Or to use your analogy, you got, right? At least with a new analogy, he's lying there in bed, and he's got two very strong emotional pulls. Stay in bed, I'm tired, get up and go daven. Right? Okay. Who's the halacha like? So he says, the halacha gedivrei ha-machria. The halacha is like the adjudicator. HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hashem comes to the assistance of the Yetzer Tov. Ha-oizroi la-Yetzer Tov. It helps the Yetzer Tov. If Hashem wouldn't help him, he wouldn't be able to defeat the Yetzer Hara. The Yetzer Hara is a very strong force. And therefore, of course, it's the Yetzer Tov's opposite opinion that helps him, but it's also Hashem's help. I did see in some of the commentaries of Tanya that there seems to be a little bit of a contradiction here between this chapter and the chapter before. Chapter 4 says that the nefesh, that by the beginning, the Yetzer Tov always wins, nefesh lakis wins because of the principle of amoyach shalit al alev, that the person is born with a thing that the brain will rule heart, right? Just give me 1 second here. So that seems to be the case. That a person has discipline, a person can overcome, the brain can rule the heart, etc. But over here it seems to say that the nefesh elokis can't do it on its own. So there's a couple of distinctions between this chapter and the last chapter. First of all, just to highlight again, there is a distinction between whether there's something wrong that the person wants to do, or it's more just thoughts that come into the brain and permissible indulgences, permissible temptations, right? So when it comes to doing something completely wrong, that the nefesh elokis on its own can kind of, just by the bane he lives in the world, it just becomes, it's not going to entertain any thought of doing something wrong. So even if the nefesh elokis in the heart sort of pulls a trigger and has a voice to do something wrong even, but it's not going to get past anything, right? Whereas if the thought goes up to the brain, like negative thoughts or indulgent thoughts, that's much harder. Then you need extra assistance, you need a godly assistance. Also, there's a difference between, because in the previous parak, he also talked about, you remember he brought in a whole section about the Beinoni davening. That's also, if a Beinoni really davened and filled his heart with true love of Hashem, even though afterwards that love dissipates a little bit, but the power, the inspiration of the love of Hashem during davening remains. And therefore, it's easier then to overcome. It's easier for the Bein Din to overcome the Yetzer Hara on its own, independently, so to speak, right? I mean, nothing happens ultimately without the self of Hashem, but in a conscious level, right? Whereas if the Bein Din hasn't davened, we still say that a person has a power not to do anything wrong. And that's if a person really wants, you know, not everyone can daven to the level of every Bein Din. And nevertheless, right, a person, not everyone has a level of depth to have contemplation and meditation and davening like the Bein Din does. Nevertheless, every person has the power. If a person really wants to, Hashem will help. Always, there isn't assistance given for the person who doesn't reach the level of davening of the Bein Din as we described in the previous parak. Okay, so that's just it. Okay. But the bottom line is that obviously Hashem just does help every person, because the proof of the pudding is that a lot of us do things that are wrong. We do give in to the Yetzer Hara sometimes, right? So what happened to Hashem's assistance? Hence, Hashem helps us when we really want to overcome it, right? In other words, the struggle is there, and the struggle has to be fought with tremendous strength and discipline. If we need a little bit of extra assistance, Hashem is right there to tip the scale and to help the shofar. But going back to this initial question, the reason the Gemara said that a Benyani, the definition of a Benyani, is someone that zeh was zeh shoftan, that both the Yetzer Tov and the Yetzer Hara are judges. The language was very carefully used. They're judges, not rulers. Which means they both have a voice, but the Nefesh HaBamis never implements his psak, his ruling, because the Nefesh of a Kis wins, especially with the assistance of Hashem. Right? However,
only with the Bein Din.
And not?
This, like what you just said, is only regarding the Bein Din.
And not a Tzaddik or not a Rasha?
Yeah, not a Rasha.
Right, so, yeah, correct. So, I mean, there's always help, yeah. Right? I mean, hopefully there's help with the aspiring Bein Din, but Hashem gives the support, even for us, as I call us, hopefully, aspiring Bein Din, not real Bein Din, right? Even for aspiring Bein Din, Hashem does it, but he doesn't do it for you. The point of the Bein Din is to overcome the Nefesh HaBamis on his own. That's the point.
Right.
Sometimes it doesn't help with a bit of assistance, right? But you've got to...
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? Like, it's a baby with training wheels, right? It's all nice. It's all very good. The training wheels are good, but it's not going to happen unless the kid actually rides the bike.
Yeah.
Right? Same thing. Same sort of. So in other words, the main job is what the Tanya is. The Tanya is telling us what to do. To work, to think, to reflect. Later on, he talks about how to really understand that every time we do something wrong, we become more distant from Hashem, and therefore we need to ignite the hidden love and the mysterious nefesh and so on and so forth, right? So the work... But Hashem helps when we really want to. In other words, it doesn't have to be even on a whole. Like when we really want to overcome, and we sincerely want to overcome, and we prepare to put in the hard work, Hashem gives us that push. Even if we're not full babies, I think. Hope, yeah, I think so. Okay, so that's one question, that's one issue he addressed. Now he wants to address the issue of how come in that oath that the Neshama took when it came down, it says, be a tzaddik, but don't be a rasha. But even if the whole world tells you that you're a tzaddik, you should be in your own eyes like a rasha. We said that's a very negative thing. Why should you do that, right? So he says like this. Ah, because the flip side of this is as follows. Okay. But since the evil, the bad, in the Beinoni is alive and strong, it does, is tempted, it has a desire for the pleasures of this world. The loinis battled the mute lagabatoiv and didn't dissolve, didn't become nullified against the good. Loinitche bimakoy makal was never pushed away, like by the tzaddik, even an imperfect tzaddik. The klipa, the ra, the bad, was at least dissolved, right? Like bottle b'shishim was explained, right? The only thing we said is raksha ein loishlita mashal is pashrei v'ragub. It just can't spread to the limbs of the body. Because Hashem stands next to the poor person and helps and shines into the Nefesh HaKis to make it stronger. Therefore, the Nefesh HaBamis never implements its evil plan. But it's still there. It still has a voice. The Lochein, therefore, Nikro Kerosha. That's why the Benini is called Kerosha. He's like a Rosha. He has similarities to Rosha. He's not a Rosha. Now he's going back into to really look at the nuanced language. Should be in your eyes, Ke Rasha, like a Rasha. Not a Rasha, like a Rasha. right? And that's what the Chazal is telling us. That Kamay Murazal, like Chazal tell us, that Afilu Kol Olam Kula Omer L'Chot Tzadika. Again, we're talking about the true terminology, the true definitions of tzaddik in Russia, right? Even if the whole world tells you you're a tzaddik, Ato Yevenecho K'Rosha. You should be like a Russia. Now let's understand that. Why does the whole world tell you you're a tzaddik? So who are we talking about here, right? Who are we talking about? We're talking about a Beinoni, right? What's the oath that the tzaddik takes, that the neshama takes? Be a tzaddik. We'll talk about this later. But we'll learn later that actually not everyone can be a real tzaddik. Tzaddik is a gift. Tzaddik it's not even an aspiration. Okay, but there's a reason why they make it part of the oath. We'll see that later. But nevertheless, the oath says be a tzaddik. But at least the oath says, since most of you are not going to be able to be a tzaddik, don't be a rasha, which means, what should you be then? A beinoni, right? A beinoni, yeah? You see, this is very important because there's another question. It says like this. It says they make the neshama take an oath, be a tzaddik, but don't be a rasha. And then if the whole world tells you you're a tzaddik, you should consider yourself a rasha. Why is that relevant? It's talking about what happens when the neshama comes down. Why do we bring that in? What the whole world's going to think and what you're going to respond? Who cares? We're talking about now, right? But the way it goes is like this. When the neshama is about to come down, Hashem makes the neshama take an oath, or gives it power, gives it strength, Tehi tzaddik, be a tzaddik. We explained before that the word shvua, oath, doesn't mean an oath necessarily. It means the word shvua comes from the word sever, to be saturated, to be filled up. So Hashem is masbi, Hashem saturates us with the power. What's that? What is that? What is the message of that power? Be a tzaddik. But if not, because most people can't reach a tzaddik, at least don't be a rasha. So what are you? A beinoni. Okay. What's going to be the result of a beinoni? You're going to be a pretty good guy, right? A beinoni is at quite a high level. A beinoni never does an avera. What's the world going to do? It's going to turn around and say, oh, you must be a big tzaddik. Right? Why? Because functionally, behaviorally, it looks like you don't have the answer. If you look at a beinoni, go accompany a beinoni, a day in the life of a beinoni, right? It looks like he has no struggle. It looks like he has no shabbos. He's eliminated it. He's transformed it. Why? Because you have a look at the beinoni, and you see he's never doing anything wrong. I don't know what's going on in his brain and his neshama and his heart. It's tiny thing, right? So you look at the beinoni, and it looks like a tzaddik. So what does the world tell the beinoni? You're a tzaddik, right? Says the Gemara, even if the whole world turns around and says you're a tzaddik, hey, yay, this is right from the beginning of Tanya, hey, benecho k'rasha, you should consider yourself a Russia. But not a Russia. Below Russia, mamash. Doesn't mean you should consider yourself a Russia. It says consider yourself someone that's got similarities to a Russia, k'rasha, which means, ela sheyachzik atzmoy b'beinani. Consider yourself a beinani. Below la ha'amin leho oylom sho'oymrim sha'rasha sh'boy nizbat l'gabe atoy. Don't believe the world when they tell you that your nefesh habamis has been dissolved. It's now completely not functional, completely anesthetized, completely eliminated. Don't believe the world again. Because then Madrega Tzaddik, that's the level of a tzaddik, right? Because why is it so important not to believe the world for this? Because if you still have a little bit of a nefesh habamis, it means you have a struggle. The worst thing is when you have a struggle is you talk yourself into it, you don't have a struggle. Because then you'll be caught off guard. Right? In other words, as long as a person is not completely certain that he has no nefesh abamis anymore, right, he's going to be very vigilant. Because you never know when the nefesh abamis will catch you off guard. So therefore, even if it seems to the rest of the world that you have reached the level of a tzaddik, you're just simply not doing anything wrong. You have avas Hashem, you daven like a tzaddik, you're an amazing person. Don't believe that there's nothing bad in it. Don't believe you have no nefesh abamis. Because if you believe that, you'll ignore the nefesh habamis, you'll be caught of God, and you might fail. Right? Ella, rather, yiyah be'einav, you should consider yourself, even if it's not so apparent, right? Even if it's a really strong beinoni. Ella yiyah be'einav ke'ilo mehusay ve'atzmusay shalara Ubetokvai, you should consider yourself that the essence of the evil, the essence of the nefesh abamis, the essence, the raw material of the klipa, of the bad, ubetokvai, urasa, is strong, it's there, it's alive and well. B'cholal asmali ketel dasa, and it's in the left ventricle of the heart, as you were born. V'lecholaf v'cholachemen u'umma, hasn't gone anywhere. It might temporarily be a little bit anesthetized, you might temporarily get it under control a bit, but it's there. Adarab, not only it's there the way you were born, this is a famous line, nischazeg yos, it's actually gotten stronger, it's actually stronger. It's stronger than when you were born. Right? It's an interesting thing. Person's behavior and his struggles might the shift, the goalposts might shift. But actually we need to know, for Beinonis, how much more so aspiring Beinonis, Nefesh HaBamis doesn't get weaker, gets stronger. Why? He says, "Shebehemshech hazman shenishtamish b'harbei b'achila v'shtia u'shar olam ha'anyon olam hazeh." Because the whole time while you're alive and you're engaged in worldliness, eating, drinking, other worldly things, every time we eat and it's not 100% the shem shemayim, we are actually making the nefesh b'amis stronger. You know, right? I mean, there is concepts where we find in Chazal that when a person gets older, the Yetzer Hara weakens, right? The Yetzer Hara becomes weaker, right? So we know that. For example, I don't know, it says that when certain people are very old, the Yetzer Hara for immorality becomes a little bit weaker. But sometimes a person, when they get older, the Yetzer Hara becomes a bit weaker. Not necessarily that much weaker, but, right? But another thing he's talking about straight off the Yetzer Hara, he's talking about the Nefesh HaBamis, right? And Nefesh HaBamis gets, you know, Nefesh HaBamis, what is Nefesh HaBamis? Nefesh HaBamis is the drive within a person for self-preservation and self-pleasure. That doesn't get better when you're older. That gets stronger, actually. And part of that self-centeredness, part of that self-ego even, unless a person really constantly fights to keep the ego under control, ego gets worse when you get older. I heard from my father once that, I think from a chassid called Reb Shoel Brook, he asked the question, he says, why? There's different words in Hebrew for the word an old person. So we say Zaken is an old person, right? Seva. There's also a word in, I think, Tilim or other places where an old person is called a Yoshish. Yoshish. Why? So he said, why is an old person called a Yuchin? Yoshish. That's a term for an old person. He says, why is an old person called a Yoshish? Because he says, you know, that the terminology used in Hasidic language to talk about an arrogant person, a person that's just a haughty, sort of self-absorbed person, is a Yesh. A Yesh means he exists, I exist, Yesh, I am, right? One of the main avoidas of Tanya is to control the Yeshus, we call it, the self-existence, and rather exercise what we call bittul, which is self-nullification, surrender to Hashem, surrender to get to lose the self a little bit, right? So we told us when a person is very self-absorbed, we call him a yesh. He says, you know why an old person is called a yoshish? Because it's twice yesh. Two times yesh. Right? In other words, the ego gets stronger, it doesn't get weaker. And the reason is what it says here in Tanya. Because as long as that nefesh abamis is still there and it's been fed physicality, physical engagement, actually strengthens it. In other words, the person is born with a nefesh habamis. Our default is a nefesh habamis. Our default is self-preservation, it's self-absorption. It's a lot of work to get the nefesh lekis to have its deciding voice, right? But that's why even if a person reaches a beinoni, even a good level of a beinoni, where it seems to the rest of the world, wow, what a tzaddik. Don't talk yourself into it that you've eliminated your nefesh habamis. It's there. It might be small, might be a bit hidden at the moment, but it's there. And it could pop out any time, and in fact, it's gotten stronger than when you were born. So beware. Be on guard.
But it's not because the struggles become harder as you refine yourself.
Different struggles, number one. And also, the struggles get easier because you've gotten into a pattern, but if you lose sight of the fact that there still is a potential struggle, then Ashbamis can come. We know that there were certain people who lived very, very holy, a very disciplined way for a long time, and then suddenly you're tempted with a terrible thing, right? So on a day-to-day routine level, you're right, struggles, goal-based change, if a person really works themselves and they and they accustom themselves, the struggles do shift. Like we say, the bainly, like the struggle of doing an avera is not even there, and like hardly. Whereas more indulgence and more temptation, even that, I mean, you know, real bainly, what's the struggle of indulgence? To eat another piece of herring? And like, you know, it's not about having the gourmet six-course meals. Right. Well, yeah. Also, you're weakening your whole concept of banyan. But even if you don't have the other piece of banyan, the banyan is still there. The banyan is still getting stronger just by the regular eating that you're doing, just by the fact that you can engage in gashmiyah. So the nefesh habamis is strengthened, not badly, but just it's become stronger. It's got a stronger voice. Just like your whole human experience is stronger when you eat and sleep, even if you sleep properly. So the point is, it could pop out any moment. So on a day-to-day level, yeah, the banyan is not thinking about the six-course restaurant meal. He's thinking about. It's an awareness. Awareness that at any moment there can be a struggle, and a big struggle. And don't be caught off guard. That's why in davening, for example, we say every single day we daven. It's an interesting thing, you get up every single day, and we say, don't put me in the hands of the right in brachas, morning brachas. Don't put me in the hands of the Yetzer Hara. Don't bring me to a test. Right? It's not only talking about tests from the outside of tragedy or challenge, it's tests from the inside. We're asking Hashem not to test us. But Hashem sometimes does, right? So we have to be on guard. Then he continues and he says like this. And everyone has to be in guard. This is what he says. The af mi shubatur shem chefza. Right? You see, there are different types of bainis, right? Anyone can be a bainis. Like we said last week, a bainis can be someone who doesn't sit all day and learn Torah. Could be a business person, for example. But he's still doing everything right. He's right. Now you can understand that the guy who, let's say, you know, I told you a story last week about Rabbi Yomi Kletzka, because he was a big rich person, but he was totally focused, even if he was doing business. Okay, but we can understand more why a Benyani, let's say, who's involved in the world, let's say he's a business or he's running a company, whatever the case is, right, fully focused on serving Hashem, but still much more engaged in this world. You can understand him or her having to be on guard much more. Because at the end of the day, he's got temptation all around it, right? So maybe that's right. Yeah. He says, no, even someone who's completely involved in Torah and he's learning Torah all day, he's sitting in Mea Sha'arim learning Torah day and night, right? Ein zoi chacha klal shenitcha rabbi mekoyim. That's no proof that the ra, the essential bad, the essential nafsha bamis material has been pushed away. It hasn't. It's still there. Yachliyos. It's possible, Shemahusso, that's Musso, but Tokvay, Burosim, and Koyman Machal Asmali. It is possible that his Nefshabamis is as strong as ever. Living, waiting, lurking in the left ventricle of the heart. The only thing is, that person, Rakshalavushov, Shemachshav, the Buramaisa, just the garments of thought, speech, and action, Shal Nefshabamis, Enam Islapshim, Moyachva, Peva, Dam, Shavarib, but just. It's just that it never makes it to thought, speech, and action. But even the person who's fully learning all day, it doesn't matter. It's still there. You'll see why he's going into this in detail in a second. Because like we said, Hashem gave control to the brain of the heart. Therefore, the nefesh lakis is in charge, right? In charge of all the limbs, levushim, rekovel, shloshim levushel. That all the limbs should just be vehicles and wagons, like completely surrendered to the three garments of machshava. She slaps shuvahem, they should enclose them. She machshava divrei ma'aser shel tarjag mitzvos haTorah. Okay, so nefesh makes sense. However, avol mehusa ve'atzmusa she nefesh lakis. But nevertheless, the essence of the nefesh lakis ain lo shlitim shalal mehusvas boshdash ba'avos beyini. Yes, there's complete control over the garments of the Nefesh HaBamis. But the Nefesh HaKis does not have control over the essence. The essence of the Nefesh HaKis does not have control over the essence of the Nefesh HaBamis. Now, as we said last week in Perigud Beis, Ki'im b'shor sh'ava savai u'bel galos libo. Now, it does have full control even on the essence of Nefesh HaBamis at certain cases, like certain times. B'itim mezumonim. Like Badavna, right? So we did say that by the Beinoni, there's sometimes that the Beinoni does have full control, almost like a tzaddik. The Nefesh HaBamis still exists, but it's completely anesthetized. So when the Beinoni is davening, for example, like I gave you an analogy, the Nefesh HaBamis still exists. By a tzaddik, it doesn't exist anymore. But the Beni still exists, but he poses no threat. Because it's like an anesthetic, right? I gave you the moshul. If you have a very aggressive person who's a threat to society. But right now he's having an operation. He's under anesthetic. Is he still around? Yes. Is he a threat? No. For now, because he's under anesthetic. But as soon as he wakes up, he'll be a threat, right? Same thing with the Beni that davens. So the point here is that the Beni is not eliminated. The Nefesh HaBamis. The Nefesh HaBamis is still very strong. And therefore still poses a threat at any time. And that's the awareness that Nefesh HaBamis, the Nefesh HaBamis, the Beni has to have. That's why even if the whole world's telling you you're a tzaddik because you behave like one, don't think you're a tzaddik. Say you like a Russia, kill Russia. Now he says, however, there is times that a Benyani is in full, that but the Benyani that the Nefesh HaBamis has no threat. Like for example, Nefesh HaBamis davens, when the Benyani davens. The Benyani davens, he anitotizes the Nefesh HaBamis, right? However, he says that the af zois, gam zois apam. But even at that moment, yes, he's completely in control of his Nefesh HaBamis. Because it comes in noifugs, they come. Like it says by Yaakov and Esau. Then when Yaakov is in control, Esau has no threat. When Esau is in control, Yaakov is in trouble, right? In other words, in other words, what happens is that when the Benyani davens, his control goes further and deeper than just the three garments of the Nefesh HaBamis. And it goes to the very essence of the Nefesh HaBamis, the heart of the Nefesh HaBamis. He's born and he's able, and he's able then to reflect, to reflect on the greatness of Hashem, and to really give birth to amazing love of Hashem, fiery love, right? At that moment, the Nefesh HaBamis is fully subjugated. At that moment, the Nefesh HaBamis poses no threat because the Nefesh HaLakis is in full control, not only of the garments of the Nefesh HaLakis, but of the Nefesh HaLakis itself. However, Avloi Nizbatel Lagamri Bebeini, but he hasn't disappeared. He's under, he's subdued, he's anesthetized, but he's still here. The elimination of the Nefesh HaBamis, Elo Betzadik, only happens by a tzadik. As it says, boy, believe like I said, but David HaMelech, my heart is hollow, meaning he hollowed out his Nefesh HaBamis. It's a horror, it didn't exist anymore. That's why the tzaddik really despises bad. He despises bad completely or not so perfectly, but he has no tolerance for any bad, and he has no threat. Right? Now he gives the analogy that I've always been giving you. I'm just rushing here because I want to get to the point that he wants to make. Avol bebenyani, but by benyani. Uderech moshel to odom sheyoshen. By the benyani, even when he davens, it's like a person that's sleeping. So in other words, like, that's what I said, anesthetized. Like the Nefesh HaBamis is asleep. Not posing a threat, but sheyochel lachzer veleil mishnosei. But he can get up. Kach ha-ra bebenyani, so too the bad in the benyani. It's like sleeping in the left ventricle. B'shas kriya shema b'tfila at the time of davening and shema, sheliboy boyer ba'avas Hashem, where his heart is burning with love of Hashem. But what happens when he finishes davening? So while he's davening, it's no threat. But while he's davening, after davening, afterwards, yocholiyas chayzer v'neir, it could reawaken. That's why, even if the whole world is telling you you're a tzaddik, you should consider yourself K-Russia, like, not a Russia, but K-Russia, like a Russia, meaning a Benyani. Because even if you are, for all intents and purposes, behaviorally, functionally, a tzaddik, but your Nefesh HaBamis is still there, it can always reawaken. Okay. Because it's even if it's when it's completely controlled, that's only by davening, when it's anesthetized, but it can always wake up again afterwards. With this concept, he goes now and he answers the question at the very beginning of Tanya about Rabbis. Let me just for the people who came in a bit later. In Perek Aleph, we brought that the Gemara says that Benyani has both an Efshar Kis Nefesh HaBamis, Yetzotov Yetzahara. And Rabbah, the great Rabbah, who was an unbelievable tzaddik, he said, like, I'm a Benyani, I'm an example of a Benyani. So he said, how can he say that about himself, right? Really, he was a tzaddik, he wasn't a Benyani. Now, so what we're going to learn is like this. Rabbah, I'll just explain it outside. The humility, like we said, humility has to make some sense. It can't be false humility, right? So we say actually Rabbah was not a Benyani, right? Rabbah was a tzaddik. You'll be tzaddik. You're taking care of the yetzer hara, right? And yet he said, I'm a Baili. Why? Because Rabbi, as we said before, was a person that was totally immersed in spirituality entirely. Right? Learning Torah at such a level that he was mamish completely focused on learning Torah. So Rabbi was a person that when we talk about the davening of a Beinoni, he was always in that davening mode. Right? You follow? Which then raises the question. He's a person that has no threat for the Nefesh HaBamis, but why? Is it because he's eliminated the Nefesh HaBamis? Or he's just constantly in davening mode where his Nefesh HaBamis is there, but just like sleeping, anesthetized. The truth about Rabbah was that he eliminated the Nefesh HaBamis. He was a tzaddik. He didn't have one. Meaning he didn't have a threatening Nefesh HaBamis. Didn't have Yetzer Hara. But he didn't think so. He thought maybe he still does. I just never had that struggle. He never had, Nefesh HaBamis never had a voice. Not like my regular Beinoni. So he thought that it's because he's davening all day, right? Let's see inside. V'lochein hoyo rabbo machazik atzmoi p'kebeinoni. And that's why Rabbi considered himself like a Beinoni. After lo'y posseik pumei megirs. He never stopped learning. The Torah Hashem cheftza yemu v'layla. The Torah, day and night, was his desire, was his passion, was his excitement. With an unbelievable yearning for Hashem, and nefesh, shaykekol Hashem, and a soul that just yearns for Hashem. Be'avu Rabba with this unbelievable love, kibushas krishma v'tvila, like a Benyani has when he says Shema u'davens, but he had it all day. Right. Therefore, v'nitbe be'enov, so he thought that he's like a Benyani, just a Benyani hamispalil kol yoyim. That davens all day. That's what he thought he was. Ukamai Marazal. And there is such a chazal, there is such a Gemara like that. The Gemara says, Halavai she yispal odom kol hayom kulot. Halavai would be a beautiful thing if a person would daven all day. What the Gemara means, according to the Tanya, is that it would be beautiful if a person could be on the madrega of davening all day. For most people, that's not the case. Even the people that daven at such a high madrega, the madrega after davening is a little bit less, right? But Rabbi was on the madrega of davening all day. So he considers himself like a Benyani. I'm not a tzaddik, I'm a Benyani. Why are you saying you're a Benyani? You're in a person that never has a temptation, you never have a negative thought, you never have anything. You seem to be in full control, even of the Nefesh HaBamis itself, not just the garments. The reason is because he knew that, but he thought that he was just on the madrega of davening. In other words, he thought he still has a Nefesh HaBamis, but it's asleep. Right? Okay. Now, he makes a... That answers the questions that he brought up in the first chapter, right? And before we go into the next perek, he makes one comment. I'm going to do it outside. He makes one comment at the end of this parak like this. Talking about, we said that a Beinoni during davening is able to reach an incredible level of love of Hashem. Rabbah, it lasted all day. Okay, for most Beinonim it doesn't, but it's very nimble. It goes away after davening. Okay. So he says we have a principle that the question is how true is that love. How true is that love? Is it a real love or is it just a made-up love? Why does he ask that question? You have a principle in Yiddishkeit that the definition of truth, you know what the definition of truth is? What's the definition of the truth?
Never changes.
Never changes, exactly. Truth, absolutely, right? There's an amazing Gemara where it talks about there's certain levels of impurity where mikveh is not enough. You have to go... I mean, you have to go into what's called like a spring water. So it's going to be a spring, right? So the Gemara talks about a certain river. There were certain rivers that used to dry up once in 7 years. And discusses if that's good enough for that. Is it considered a spring water? Not whatever. But there's a term used for those rivers. It's called Nahoris Hamchazvin. false rivers. Why they're called false rivers? Because they don't flow all the time. They stop every 7 years. They dry up. Right? So they're called Noras HaMechazer. For a person to have true love of Hashem, right, it has to be a state of constant being. So how true is that love of a man? Right? So he says an interesting concept. He shares an interesting idea. That it depends what you... Truth is absolute, but it's also relative. Right? Because consistency of something is also a relative idea. What does that mean? He says like this. You're right. Compared to the madrega of a tzaddik, Taka, the love of a Benyani, the love of Hashem, the madrega of the Benyani is not called truth. Because truth is something constant. And a tzaddik is the person that is always in that level of avas Hashem. Right? However, that doesn't mean there's a deficiency in the Benyani. A Benyani, and some people can only reach a Benyani. Right? The Benyani, when they've reached the level they can reach, for them that's considered complete truth. Why? Each person according to their madrega Benyani, because that truth, in other words, because the consistency is there by Benyani as well, just in a different context. What's the consistency by Benyani? Attack is not consistent, it goes back. But the Benyani always possesses the power to reawaken it. So because the Benyani knows how to daven and the Benyani knows how to do it, that consistency is a different type of consistency, right? It can always be reawakened at any moment. And therefore, for the Benyani, it is called truth. And I think, yeah, and he says, because that's how truth works. Truth is something that's always consistent, but it's not necessarily always that exactly the same level. Because the consistency can express itself in different madrigas, right? It's a very, now that's in terms of the Benyani, but that's just a very, very important, it's a very, very important concept because it's true on that's why it says truth is actually like almost an unlimited thing, an infinite thing. Because you know, sometimes people put themselves down because they're inconsistent, right? So let's say a person fails one day and he passes another day. It doesn't have to even be anything. A person, let's say, I don't know, he overcomes his struggle one day, right? And he davened properly, or he did a mitzvah, right? Or he didn't respond to someone negatively. And the next day he did, failed, right? So most people, sometimes they say, you see, well then I'm just not, and this is not, the whole thing is just not working. If I couldn't keep up what I experienced yesterday, that means I'm just a fake. So I was acting yesterday, okay. So you know, if I would really have changed, then today wouldn't be the same problem, right? That's not true. Because every kedusha, everything godly that we do is true. And if I was able to do the mitzvah yesterday, I'm able to do it today too. I didn't try hard enough. Okay, that's true. But I have the ability to do it. Means the struggle I overcame yesterday, I have the ability to overcome any time. I didn't overcome it today, but I have the ability to do that. There's a consistency there also. The concept is a concept of truth. Any godly thing is an idea of truth. Right? And therefore, what I did yesterday is true. The fact that today didn't happen today doesn't mean yesterday wasn't true. Relatively speaking, in my madrega. Follow? That's an important thing to understand. This concept that even at the lowest level of a person, there's always truth is always available, right? In other words, it's not a level like for the tzaddik. It's true. The highest level of truth is the tzaddik. He's in consistent focus about love of Hashem all the time. Benyani is less than madrega, but nevertheless, it doesn't mean he doesn't have truth. Compared to the tzaddik, for the tzaddik's level is not considered truth, but for him it is. But that's what he can reach. And for the person lower than that, it's also true. So truth is something that is true, that but has consistency, even though it might be a consistency in a different context. Yeah, is that clear? Okay. So this parak, basically, this is the parak, and this is the parak was to sort of answer the questions that he had at the very beginning of Tanya. And now what he does is he keeps on going more and more, just different aspects of Beinoni and why Beinoni has a struggle, or you're overcoming the struggle, and strategies to get to overcome the struggle, and so on and so forth, as it keeps going. Okay.